Whereas offences against property have of late increased in and near the metropolis, and the local establishments of nightly watch and nightly police having been found inadequate to the prevention and detection of crime, and whereas it is expedient to substitute a new and more efficient system of police in lieu of such...
Peeler by Patrick Carroll. Episode 2.
Oh, Mr. Peel, what have you done? Your police act so grand, sir. It will be the cause, I have no doubt, of filling Van Diemen's land, sir. London now, believe me, sir, is overstruck with queer going. Who wish the police act and you were sent to Jimmy Square's house.
But in the name of common sense and common humanity, we call upon Englishmen to abstain from outrageous violence against their fellow countrymen who are merely acting in the faithful discharge of the duties imposed on them. So speaks the Thunderer.
I can see that the tone marks a progress, although the sentiments are only what any decently disposed person must espouse.
Well, let us count such blessings as we are permitted. If we may presently prevail upon this same august organ to cease printing false and biased reports of our people's conduct, we shall be a good step forward.
Morning, Mr. Yardley.
Good morning, Mr. May. Colonel Rowan.
Ah, Mr. Yardley, you look, if you'll forgive my saying so, rather harassed for so early an hour.
I confess to feeling a little more harassed than usual, sir.
Well, I'm sure you'll bear up nobly.
Yes, Colonel, thank you. I merely wish to say that I have dispatched the precautionary letters to the gas companies.
Yes, I can imagine nothing more cunningly designed to exacerbate our present difficulties than that the town should be plunged into sudden darkness.
I've also been handed copies of these handbills, which are being widely distributed about the streets.
Ah. Liberty or death, Englishmen, Britons, and honest men, the time has at length arrived. All London meets on Tuesday. Come armed.
Oh.
We assure you from ocular demonstration that 6,000 cutlasses have been removed from the tower for the use of Peel's bloody gang. Ocular demonstration, indeed. Still, it's no more than we've become used to.
Was that all, Mr. Yardley?
Yes, sir, beyond mentioning that the commissioners will recall that they have an appointment today with Mr. Place.
Oh. Why, so we do. Events have been so pressing, I'd forgotten. We'll be pleased to see Mr. Place when he calls. Thank you, Mr. Yardley.
I confess to some curiosity as to why the notorious radical tailor of Charing Cross wishes to call upon the commissioners of police.
As we had occasion to observe only a moment ago, it doesn't do to believe everything one reads about any individual in the public prints.
Be so good as to close that door, Sergeant Dutton.
Yes, sir.
Before we join the men for general inspection, I must inform you all, as sergeants under my command, that a decision has been taken at the highest level of His Majesty's government, which will require of all our people the greatest vigilance.
Begging your pardon, Inspector, but the men have been right up under it for a week past. What's in the wind now, if you'll forgive me asking?
I cannot say precisely. The Secretary of State will make a statement in Parliament this afternoon. However, late yesterday evening, Sunday, superintendents of all divisions were notified by the commissioners that every single man in the force was to be put upon immediate and urgent requisition for duty.
Oh, no.
Further orders may be expected in the course of the day.
And in the meanwhile, Inspector?
We must carry on our usual duties. I leave every sergeant to prepare his constables for the situation in such a way as to put them in a state of readiness, but not of excitement.
Bolt?
Yes, my lord.
Your lordship's coffee. Well diluted with brandy, I trust.
Yes, my lord. Mr. Lytton called a short while ago and left his card. He's a reverend gentleman.
Damnably early hour for soliciting subscriptions. Why can't the reverend gentleman do as the others and carry on his cadging by letter?
Mr. Lytton was not seeking contributions, my lord.
What the devil did he want in that case?
The gentleman was desirous to ascertain the condition of Squire's, your lordship's, coachman.
What conceivable business is that of Mr. Lytton's, pray?
I could not undertake to say, my lord.
As with bow legs in a sailor, impertinence is the occupational affliction of all clergymen. And what did you convey to Mr. Lytton concerning Squires?
I referred him to Mr. Nettles, the surgeon.
And what is his opinion?
Squires remains very ill. He has not yet regained consciousness.
Poor devil. Inform Mr. Nettles and Squire, should he come to himself, that his master has made suitable inquiries as to his condition.
Yes, my lord.
And we've again had complaints from Mr. Bunn in Leather Lane that the costers continue to block his doorway at night with their barrows. Our legal position in the matter is not altogether clear. Are you attending, Constable Quinn?
I beg your pardon, Sergeant. I do find myself thinking of something else.
This is not the day to send your wits a-wool-gathering. And I not your previous conduct as evidence for the contrary, I should suspect that you were the worse for drink this morning. And is it your intention to grow a beard, Constable?
No, sir, no. I've not had the opportunity to shave myself.
You had best make an opportunity.
Yes, sir.
What has this come over you these past few days? You ain't still fretted over that coachman or lord, whatever his name is.
I am, but, well, not fretted exactly, but it's a hard thing to kill a man, or even nearly so.
Oh, wouldn't he have served you the same? Didn't he try?
Yes, sir, but it is still an awful thing to kill a man.
Oh, I couldn't say, never having done such a thing.
I have, and I tell you it is.
Why, that was in the war. And if this wretched coachman died, it'll be just the same as if it were in a war.
How do I come to be at war with me own people?
Gentlemen, Mr. Francis Place.
Good day, Mr. Place.
Good day, gentlemen. I trust that despite the present public mood, I see you well.
Yes, pray be seated, Mr. Place. And do us the honour of informing us in what way we may be of service to you.
Thank you, Colonel. But before I come to my primary purpose in calling, might I inquire if you received the books I took the liberty of sending?
We did, Mr. Place. It was exceedingly kind of you to trouble.
And what did you make of them,
Ah, well, you'll appreciate that we've enjoyed but little leisure for study of late. In consequence, I've been able to give only fleeting attention to the volumes you sent.
Now, for my part, Mr. Place, I have already some acquaintance with the works of Mr. Bentham and his followers. I must allow that there is much value in them.
Oh, I'm happy to hear you say so.
However, as to the late but no less egregious Mr. Payne...
Yes, I don't conceal from you my opinion that Citizen Payne's Jacobinism is rather strong for my blood. And as a humble... and I hope conscientious Christian, I cannot but deplore his views on religion.
Entirely understandable, Colonel. In my own case, I find... Yes, but gentlemen, much as I would relish a philosophic discourse on general ideas and principles, I have not intruded upon your valuable time for that purpose.
On some other occasion, perhaps. However, for the present...
Gentlemen, I have come to you today with what I hope is a practical solution to a practical problem.
And what problem is that, Mr. Place?
The control of riotous assemblies.
Oh.
Indeed. Why, I should have thought... you will excuse my saying so, but your own highly outspoken views would appear...
Gentlemen, I am convinced that in the democratic, utilitarian republic to which I aspire, there will be little occasion for public disorder, and therefore less need for coercion in its suppression. However... I do not think that riot and rapine are the methods by which to bring about the society I seek, nor do I think that any society, however ideally constituted, can tolerate organised public disorder.
I think we may all agree about that, sir. And what, if I may inquire, is your suggested remedy?
I had occasion, as who has not, to witness the disturbances of last week following the Prime Minister's extremely ill-judged remarks to their lordships.
Yes.
It is the height of presumption in me to say so to so distinguished a soldier as Colonel Rowan of the 52nd, but, in my humble opinion, the tactics presently employed by your men in such situations are misguided and futile.
Indeed? How so, Mr. Place?
The police must not wait until they are attacked, and then, when they are maltreated and bruised, take a few vagabonds into custody. As soon as the inspectors see a mob prepared to make an attack, they should lead their men on, staves drawn, and thrust those who compose the mob as long as they remain together, but to take none into custody. If that were done once or twice, there'll be no more mobs.
Upon my word, Mr. Place, your suggestion, which I must observe, is based upon the soundest military principles, is one well worth consideration.
Although I must again remark my astonishment at its coming from such a source.
Why so, Mr. May?
But that so renowned a champion of the common people should prescribe such treatment for them is, well, unexpected.
The atrocious events which occurred at St. Peter's Field, Manchester, 11 years ago, and many other such incidents, have led me to the belief that it is better that the organisers of disorder, and such of the people who follow them, should suffer a few cracked heads and broken limbs, than that they should be opened upon by musketry or slashed to pieces by mounted cavalry.
Oh, that, if I may say so, is a profoundly utilitarian view. It's refreshing to meet a man prepared to put his principles to so thorough a practical test.
It is very gratifying to hear you say so, Colonel.
Ah, good day to you, Screever.
What? How did you get into my premises, Mr. Morley? I shall have you in charge for trespass.
Nonsense, Screever. The door is on the latch and your open nose faces the road.
That ain't the way I left them.
Well, well, a passing gust of wind, no doubt. Hmm. You're quite snug here. Rather a step up from your last situation, eh, Screever?
The past is the past, Mr. Morley. Whatever I may have been, or you thought me to be, I am now a printer in a respectable way of trade.
Quite turned over the new leaf, have you, Scriv? Or, must I call you Mr. Reed now?
You must consult your own conscience as to that, Mr. Morley. Why? Here, where are you going?
Why, I thought you'd embrace the opportunity to show an old acquaintance over your new and high respectable place of business.
Mr. Morley, please speak. No.
Oh. This is handsome machinery, Mr. Reed. The very best and latest designs. Newest improvement. Cleans itself and recites passages from the classics, I shouldn't wonder.
Well, it don't do to skimp at the outset of an enterprise.
No, indeed not. No. Quite a block of capital tied up in these presses. Not all your own, surely.
Well, as you mentioned, Mr. Morley, I've been fortunate in attracting a principal who has advanced a liberal sum towards the business.
Oh, of course you have. And who might this principal be?
I couldn't divulge that, Mr. Morley.
And what use have you been making of these mechanical wonders? Visiting card for Mrs. Boyce of Bowling Green Lane? Advertisement for Messrs. Aston & Co., Iron Founders of Pentonville? And why? What is this, Screever?
Here, what you got there?
Sedition, Screever. Rank sedition, or I mistook. Why? Only listen to this. Englishman, you have let a good opportunity escape you. Your families are starving while your oppressors roll in luxury.
Oh, but Mr. Morley, I'll never...
Who began the riots on Tuesday? Peel's bloodthirsty gang? Do not tell me that Peter the Screever is also Captain Swing.
I? Not I. It's money to me and nothing more.
It is more, Screever. Not merely have you produced this effusion, you've printed a bill and not put name to it. There are penalties prescribed for that, Screever.
Oh, be reasonable, Mr. Morley. How could I put my name on
it? How indeed? I should report this to the Lord Chancellor directly.
No, you wouldn't do that. Not when I'm on the first step of a new way of life. You wouldn't, surely.
Well, now that rather depends.
Depends on what? Mr. Morley.
Why? It'll have some bearing on the reason why I called on you, Screever. A matter of business.
My business?
Our business, Screever. Our business. I mean, what do you make of this letter I have here?
Oh. Why, it's certainly written in a good law hand. Apart from that.
Never seen you before, I suppose?
No, Mr. Morley. Not as I'm a...
You wicked shark, man, Screever. Do you think I don't know your fist by this time? You wrote that letter as sure as death.
I never did, I swear.
Don't deny it. Don't have the impudence. You wrote it. But what I want to know is why. Here's a letter addressed to a lady. A married lady by her name. And that letter containing some choice and warmishly sentimental language. And a letter signed with a noble name. How comes such a letter to have been written by the likes of you, Screever?
I copied it as a favour.
As a favour to whom?
Oh, Mr. Morley, I couldn't tell the name.
You can and you will. Or rather, I shall tell you and you shall confirm my word.
Oh, please, Mr. Morley, I can't.
Aye, now, I hazard a guess that your generous patron is a lady. Huh? I thought as much. A lady of fashion, A lady who resides in Deanery Street, Mayfair,
Yes, Mr. Morley, sir.
A lady of the name of Mrs. Gascoigne, eh? Now, I've been wishing an audience with Mrs. Gascoigne, but she hasn't been agreeable to my requests up till now.
I shall wish you to arrange that audience, Greaver.
No, I beg you, Mr. Morley. Only think of my position.
I am thinking of it, Greaver. I am thinking of it.
Everyone is aware that there exists in the public mind considerable excitement against those authorities which have been appointed under the sanction of the House. I allude, of course, to the body known as the New Police. I am sorry to be obliged to inform the House that in the course of Saturday and Sunday last, the most industrious attempts were made to inflame the public mind against the New Police. Yes. Thousands of printed handbills were circulated to that end. These, sirs, are the grounds on which the members of His Majesty's government came to the unanimous resolution of advising His Majesty that the occasion should not be given for assembling on a November night an immense concourse of people of all descriptions. I know it will be said that the government is unpopular, whilst His Majesty is most enthusiastically beloved by his people. I will submit to any change founded on the obloquy or objection.
Father, I have come to take my leave of you. Father, did you not hear?
You've come to take your leave of me. Take it.
And will you not wish me Godspeed?
Godspeed? The angel mail has speed enough for you and more to take an ungrateful baggage from our proper home.
Oh, Father.
Don't snivel at me. Go on, off with you.
I have left instructions with Mrs. Gregory as to your particular arrangement.
Left instructions? Left your senses and any sense of duty you ever had, and that ain't much.
How can you say so, Father?
Deserting your home and duties to go off to skulk and idle with your minx's cousin? Where you spend the day blackguarding your father behind his back? When you ain't reading those filthy books?
Merciful heavens, Father, you cannot begrudge me a brief holiday. In the country, not far away. In God's name, simply to recover my health and spirits.
Your health and spirits? You lost them here. How is it you can't find them here?
I believe you know the answer to that.
Aye, Martin. But no, I forbid the mention of that faithless ruffian's name by anyone else in my house. I shall dirty my own tongue with it.
Oh, cruel, Father, it is not natural.
Cruel, am I? Was it cruel in me to take liberties with my master? Was it unnatural in me to carp and cavil at that master's very intent and action? Or was it cruel and unnatural that when reminded of his place, that servant should strike his master?
You know who struck the first blow.
And why would I not? Was I to be served so by a hypocritical scoundrel, one half my age?
He served you faithfully for 11 years.
Did he? And did he serve me faithfully at the end?
More so then than ever, could you but see.
Go off with you, if you're going. If I'm not to have a dutiful child, I shall at least have my house to myself.
Goodbye, Father. I shall write soon.
Don't trouble yourself.
Are you ready, Quinn?
I am, though it's strange being in mufti after a year in which I've spent scarcely a day out of uniform.
Well, even with a common beaver and a new greatcoat, you're still a constable. Now, carry out your instructions and then come to join us at Charing Cross.
Yes, Sergeant.
Now, before you go, Quinn, you better have this letter. It's from Mr. Lytton.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Constables, away in a quick march!
My dear Martin, I have only this moment returned from the house of Mr. Nettles, the surgeon attending upon the coachman Squires. I am thankful to be able to inform you that Squires regained consciousness some hours ago. He remains but poorly. However, Mr. Nettles assures me that he will be fully recovered in time. In haste, Charles Lytton.
Thank God.
People of England! Hey! Arouse yourselves! Be free, be no longer imposed upon. Shall it be told abroad that Englishmen alone dare not unfold the banner of liberty? We which they have so long
what?
The sight of.
Have you no weapon, Cully?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you're a good big chap, but them raw lobsters aren't going to come and make us naked.
Oh, I don't know. Can you get arms?
Come along to Chancery Lane and I'll show you a fine arsenal.
Yeah, Chancery Lane, you say?
Aye, cut along after me. Here, come, make way. Are you one of the... now where he's gone to?
And what appointment are you late to, Constable?
Mr. Morley, what are you doing in the middle of this bedroom?
Apart from counting more pickpockets than one could see at Epsom, why should I not be simply trying to reach my lodging?
Had I been you, I should have found a quieter way than this.
Perhaps. I've only now come through Chancery Lane. The rabble are tearing down the scaffolding about the new records office and taking the palings for stage.
Ah, that'll be the arsenal I was told of. I cannot stop, Mr. Morley. I must be back on the Westminster side directly.
Keep by me, Constable. We'll make our way through the inns and along the river.
What's them 6,000 tar cutlasses we've heard so much on?
Aye, this here start office feeling like a bare twig just now.
What are those devils up to on the city side?
And where are the city constables, I should like to know?
Oh, well, in bed, if they ain't in the mob themselves.
Well, they ain't getting any closer anyway. Not yet.
Constable Rock!
Oh, what the...
Yes, Sergeant?
Any sign of Constable Queen?
None yet, Sergeant. We're watching.
Mr. Phillips, yes, sir. Be so good as to have these messages conveyed to His Grace the Prime Minister and to Colonel Rowan at Whitehall Place.
Yes, sir. This note has arrived from the Commissioners. Are there fresh developments?
Compose yourself, Mr. Phillips. We have a troop of constables ringed round the house. I think we may trust our safety to them.
No doubt, Sir Robert, no doubt. Nevertheless, I confess to finding the prospect of what threatens to go forward tonight most dispiriting.
That will depend upon the outcome. I am confident that the new police will be equal to any situation which may arise.
I am happy to share the Home Secretary's confidence. The alternative is...
appalling, I agree, Mr. Phillips. If control of the streets should revert to the mob, all hope of orderly progress will evaporate. That cannot and will not happen. I think we may expect our crisis within the hour, Mr. Phillips. I shall presently have a communication for His Majesty. Please have a messenger at hand.
Yes, Sir Robert.
Quinn, are you back safely? Who's this gentleman with you?
Jeremiah Morley at your service, Sergeant.
Mr. Morley of Bow Street?
The same, sir.
Oh, an honour, I'm sure, Mr. Morley, but you will forgive me. Now, Quinn, what's going forward the other side of Temple Bar?
The Rotunda meeting has broken up and the mob come across Blackfriars Bridge. More are coming from the east and north, and Mr. Morley has seen many arming themselves in Chancery Lane.
Look, are the gas lights still lit?
As yet they are.
What is the report, Sergeant? Who's this gentleman?
Mr. Morley, Inspector. Mr. Morley of Bow Street.
Oh, Mr. Morley? Well, I hardly expected. Look, you'll understand, Mr. Morley, we are under...
Oh, just so, Inspector. Ignore me entirely. I'm not here.
Thank you, sir. Now, Quinn, what can you tell us as to numbers? How many against us? And you'd best resume your uniform, coat and hat.
700 to 800 at Temple Bar, as many again scattered about the city, and another 300 to 400 at the west end of the town, the majority converging towards Apsley House.
The Prime Minister's household must make do with such men as are there already. No more can be spared.
What of our own position?
The headquarters party are issued with swords and posted at the entrances, Whitehall Place and Scotland Yard both.
Shall we have actually to fight on our own doorstep, Colonel?
My dear Mayne, all of the method and discipline which we've been at such pains to instill into our men over the past 15 months is about to be put to the test. Should our training and organisation fail, we shall know that we ourselves have failed. At the present moment, we must trust to the valour of the men.
And to the tactical advice of Mr. Francis Place.
Here they are! Draw staves and stand ready!
In the King's name, I call upon this assembly to disperse! Charge and scatter!
Viscount Troll, gentlemen.
Good day, my lord. May be seated.
I shall stand, thank you, sir. The method of this proceeding is already rather too informal for my taste.
As you wish, my lord.
Police Constable number 47, G Division, Quinn.
Sir, I recognise the blackguard.
Constable, you are aware that this gentleman has been in communication with this office concerning your conduct?
I warned you, gentlemen, that you should deal with me again.
You did indeed, my lord.
I have been honoured by the receipt of another of the Commissioner's form letters. This concerning my abused coachman, Squires.
Your lordship's condescension in attending personally in a matter involving merely a servant is to be admired.
As my coachman is presently confined to the bed in which he is singularly fortunate not to have died, and as I consider his treatment at the hands of the police to be an enormity of the utmost degree, I cannot but take personal notice.
Most understandable. Constable Quinn, as you are also aware, whenever the commissioners receive a complaint concerning a member of the police force, the complainant is invited either to raise an action against the man involved or to attend here in order to confront that member of the police and to present his case and witnesses to the consideration of Mr. Mayne and myself.
And by universal opinion, with which I am in complete agreement, a damned un-English Star Chamber Inquisition it is.
I have heard that view expressed, my lord, and as a lawyer I only observe that our justice, imperfect as it may be, is certainly quicker and more economically obtained than that on offer elsewhere. Although, as Colonel Rowan has said, the choice of tribunal is entirely that of the complainant.
Come, gentlemen, let us get on, if you please. This minion of yours has viciously assaulted my coachman and very nearly killed him. There can be no dispute in the matter. I witnessed the entire incident myself.
Constable Quinn?
I cannot deny inflicting the injuries in question. I am deeply grieved to have been forced to do so.
Forced? Upon my soul. Is there a general instruction requiring your men to break the heads of all the populace?
I was attacked in the course of my duties by his lordship's coachman and two other of his servants. I had no choice but to defend myself. And I will respectfully add that his lordship was not an entirely passive witness.
How so, Constable?
As I recollect his words, his lordship cried out to his servants, "Thrash him, kill him." And he offered a reward to the man that should bring me down.
Upon my word, Lord Trowell.
It's a despicable lie. I said no such words.
Constable, will you stand by what you have just said under oath?
I will, and if necessary, I will bring brother officers to witness the truth of what I say.
Brother officers? Gentlemen, I insist that this callous ruffian be visited with the severest punishment available.
I fear, my lord, that nothing I have heard today would justify me in such a course.
You are, I see, dedicated and determined to insult me. I have given you my word as a gentleman and peer of the realm, and you refuse to take it against that of a common constable.
I know from my own experience and observation that Constable Quinn is not a common constable. However, even if he were the commonest of constables, I should be no less inclined to believe his word, all else being equal, than I would that of the Archbishop of Canterbury.
We shall see if a proper court of law shall be so easily imposed upon. Good day!
Constable, you're aware of what must now go forward?
I think so, sir.
The coachman Squires will almost certainly, at the instigation of his master, bring an action against you for assault, or worse.
And I fear that your only recourse will be to bring a countercharge.
Yes, I quite see
that. That countercharge must be brought in your own name, and we, sadly, can offer you scant practical aid in the matter.
We'll do all in our power to prevail upon the Secretary of State for some relief of a pecuniary nature. But that, and our moral support aside, you must enter the courtroom as naked and in as lonely a condition as any Daniel entering into the lion's den.
That was episode 2 of Peeler by Patrick Carroll, with Mick Ford as Martin Quinn, James Booth as Jeremiah Morley, Norman Jones as Sir Robert Peel, Joanna Myers as Mariah Staples, and Richard E. Grant as Lord Trowell. Peter Jeffrey played Colonel Rowan, and Killian McKenna, Richard Maid. Peter the Screever was played by Fraser Carr, and Francis Place by Mark Straker. Other parts were played by Timothy Bateson, Richard Pierce, Ian Lindsay, James Green, Alan Barker, Timothy Carlton, and Ronald Herdman. The singer was Martin Carthy. Peeler was directed by Janet Whittaker. For Mr. Peel's new watchman will be far too strong to fear you.